I'm going to be full body paint Elphaba. Scratch that. You're going to put me in prosthetics, and I love it.
Hi, everyone. My name is Georgia Evans.
My name is Riley Bukikio.
And you're listening to Theater with Pride.
This is our first Meet the Artist Monday, and we are so overjoyed to have the 2016 PA premiere of Polka Dots and the cast and creator here with us today.
Yes. Yeah, so to start, could everyone just go around and introduce themselves and how they were involved with this production or Polka Dots, the Cool Kid musical in general?
Hello, everybody. I'm Douglas Lyons. I am conceiver, lyricist, and co-music writer of Polka Dots, the Cool Kids musical.
Hi, I am Colleen Clancy, and I played Penelope Square in Polka Dots.
My name's Danielle DeFazio, and I played Mrs. Square, the teacher, in Polka Dots.
Hi, I'm Adam Hoyak. Oh, yes, I played Sky.
Hi, everyone. My name is Naomi Braff. I am a resident of South Florida. I actually came to Pennsylvania to be a part of Polka Dots from Florida. So that was awesome. It was an awesome experience. I was Lily Polka Dot. Yay! It was really fun. And I wish I could go back. It was such simpler times then, you know?
Yeah.
So we just wanted to start with asking, like, how is everyone? We were talking about how there's this line in the show that you can't rehearse being the first. And I feel like we're all kind of like, we were thrown into this thing. We certainly got no rehearsal for all the stuff that we're doing right now. And we're kind of being the first as theater artists to take on this online platform and looking at what theater looks like from a distance. So I was just wondering how that is for you.
I guess I'll go first. It's weird. It's very weird. But I also feel a true sense of connection with people when I have Zooms like this or meetings. I'm also starting to get in like to the TV film world. And so I've had a lot of meetings in that sector. It's very strange. You know, I had not had a hug in 2 months, and my roommate, he moved in, we hugged the other day, and I was just like, oh my God, like this is, wow, I miss that, you know? So it is definitely an adjustment. Business is still going on. Obviously we can't perform, but it's been a roller coaster.
I feel like I have been going on a wild roller coaster where some days I'm like, I am going to better myself. I'm going to come out of this like a new person. I'm going to be a cook. I'm going to be a writer. I'm going to be a blah, blah, blah. And there are some days when I'm really like, okay, I did some things. And some days I feel like I am losing my mind. So it's been a really good kind of like a self-reflective time that I think is really important for kind of everybody to get more of a handle of themselves instead of just rushing through the day to day without realizing what's going on in their heart and mind all the time. So I'm thankful for that. But it's been rough sometimes.
Yeah, I was furloughed from my theater job. So it's been difficult. So I'm not doing any teaching artist stuff, which is a super bummer, but I'm reading a lot and working on some different projects kind of that have been sitting wishing they could be worked on, and now I've got all the time in the world to work on them. So I try to give time to that, but I've also been really thinking about my life and what I want my life to be like.
That's great. This is so crazy that this is all going down, but I think it's cool. I think it's nice to be experimenting with a different way to try to keep theater and theater education, you know, alive.
Yeah. So for me, I've been dealing with a lot of people reaching out to me, like you guys, asking me to, you know, give my little two cents about being a theater performer and being in this pandemic. It sucks. I was actually supposed to do a show literally like right before they closed everything down. I was going to be in Ragtime. Yeah, I was going to be in Ragtime, and we were about to go into tech, and they were like, yeah, we're shutting down everything. So it was really unfortunate, and it sucks because, like, you know, this is our livelihood, you know what I mean? Like, if we can't be in theater together, if we can't, like, theater people touch all the time. Like, you know what I mean? It just makes us think about what other ways we can do this. And I think that it's so awesome that we've kind of just, instead of us taking a backseat and be like, dang, like we can't do anything, we've pushed forward and utilized the access that we have, like using Zoom, using like the internet, using the social media platforms that we have, just to push out a little bit of some good, some, you know, art into the world, no matter what it is, because then we can reach so many other people that we probably couldn't even have reached when we were just on stage. You know what I mean? So it's been struggle, but it's also been pretty rewarding and a very new learning experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
What drew you all to the show? Doug, I'd like to start with you first. When was the, like, your aha moment where you decided, this is a story I want to tell and this is how I want to tell it?
I found a Felicia Rashad interview on YouTube where she talked about growing up in the Jim Crow South. And she one day tasted a white-only water fountain as a 6-year-old or 8-year-old girl. And I thought, oh my goodness, how innocent and brilliant the curiosity of a child not understanding racism, which our country still seems not to understand. And so she tasted the water. And that was like, whoa, that small action was revolutionary in my mind. And so that's where the world of Lily Polka Dot came about, that she's integrated into the School of All Squares. And she has this curiosity for the square sprinkler. She's been told she's only allowed to drink from the polka dot pump. And with my collaborators, Greg Borofsky and Melvin Tunstall III, we created this sort of Skittles world of song and exchange and conversation and curiosity and youth, with only 4 people. And, Limelight was one of the first to do it. Talking about the first, that's a full circle. Y'all were one of the first theaters to do the show.
That's so cool.
I personally felt very strongly about the subject matter, and I really loved that it was children instead of adults, because it helped us look at it more in a way. I think when it's adults dealing with this subject matter, it's easier to just be like, you're evil. You don't understand that this is not right, you know? But as children, it's like, oh, okay, you need to learn this. You know, you haven't been taught correctly, maybe, or you haven't learned to grasp that this is what life is. And it's easier to forgive, I think, but this makes it more of like, oh, okay, we're learning. This is a good lesson to teach. I wanted to be a part of that lesson.
That's really beautiful. It's like the hope that the children will learn the lesson that the adults did not learn. That's why we tell this story.
I love that message.
Yeah, and I know even like seeing it as a 14-year-old who like, I would say is probably like a little bit older than the target audience, like I still felt like super connected to it. When I saw it at Limelight and how like important the message was and how cool it was that it was really targeted at that younger audience.
Yeah, that was the one thing that really drew me in. I just moved to Philly and I didn't know anybody. And I was like, I just do children's theater. That's what I do. And I saw the post for it and I went in and then we were talking about it and I was like, this is what we need. I love lots of different children's theater. There's nothing like a good book adaptation of James and the Giant Peach, which is a show I really want to do. But there was something so timely about this. Research proves that children, once they reach the age of 6 and 7, have started to internalize their thoughts and feelings about people of other races, other religions, different neighborhoods, because of the society that's built around them, what they've been taught by their parents, what they're taught in school, that having a show like this with this specific subject matter for this age group is so important. And to not have it presented in a way, like Colleen said, that like, oh, these kids are evil. They're not evil. They're learning or relearning, as the case may be. And I was so excited to work with a group of people who were forward thinking in that way. And it's not just another like, we're gonna do a cute little show for kids and everybody's gonna love it with fun music. Yeah, there's fun music, but there's a deeper message that isn't kids aren't hit over the head with the message over and over and over again. It's woven in really beautifully.
Yeah, I to kind of go off of all of that as well, the subject matter of the show really, really did draw me in. Just because also having a past being, when I was younger, of being bullied and not accepted, and it was always hard, and it's hard for everybody regardless of what you're being, like whatever reason you're being pushed away for, like being gay, being your race, you know, anything, it doesn't matter. And it was special for me, especially because the character of Sky, he wasn't being bullied, nor was he the bully.
Mm.
And it was fun for me because I got to play around with of making Sky be a person that was someone maybe that I needed growing up. Mm. You know, he was accepting, and he maybe questioned some things based on what he learned in his own home, but he was still open-minded and willing to kind of break that cycle of what he was taught. And I think when I was younger, I encountered a lot of younger people that didn't know how to do that. So it was really fun for me to create a character that I think if I were to meet as a young kid, would have really like saved a lot of stuff for me. So it was really special to get to play that part. And then the team itself of, you know, getting to work with Chad and, you know, sing Douglas's songs and music, and like Colleen and Danielle, like Danielle, I didn't know you, Colleen, I'd been wanting to work with you. And it was just like, it was just a special experience. It really meant a lot getting to do it.
So I wanted to ask, kind of going off of that, how did it feel to be a part of a show with such a pointed activist message?
Honestly, I love doing shows like this. It's so rewarding because you see, like when you're after the show, if you do like a meet and greet, which we did a lot, and we're talking to these kids who wouldn't have seen the show otherwise if we didn't do it, and they're not getting you know, exposed to this stuff, but then we put a show on like this and they're like, wow, like this really changed my perspective, or you know what I mean, I'm learning something. And those are the best kinds of shows. If you can sit in an audience and learn something from a show, then like perfect, like you know what I mean. And so what this type of show is doing is it's changing the world. It's setting a tone for a future generation to literally be like, wow, okay, well, you know what? Now I need to go out into the world and, you know, pay it forward. Do what I can to change the world too, just like these characters in this show. So I don't know. I love it.
Yeah, I feel like there's more of a sense of urgency about it, kind of like, okay, we need to get this out. You know, it's not just, oh, I want you to come see my show because it's fun and like, it's cute. You know, it's like, please, please bring your family, bring friends. We need to, you know, it just feels more urgent and necessary.
Yeah, it feels urgent and necessary, but without feeling like you're shoving it, the message into like the targeted demographic. It is the urgency is molded so well with playfulness and creativity and a like insane amount of imagination that it makes you like want to take that message in, because it's not being like forced down your throat. You know, it's like, this is happening, this is real, and we need to pay attention to it. And here is a wonderful example of how it pays off and it works and it's fun. So, you know, Georgia, you were explaining about how as a 14-year-old, you were saying that it's not, you know, you might've been older than the targeted demographic, but that's what makes Polka Dot so beautiful, like a Disney movie, is that the kids will get it and love it and they will get the message, but the adults can sit back and go, yeah, this is smart. This is what my kid needs that I didn't have, which I think is so beautiful about this show.
I think part of what I've learned when it comes to activism and art is that often it can come from a place of anger and pain. And so it bounces off to the audience as like, hey, dear white person or dear bully or whatever, this is why you're a horrible person. And what Polka Dots is trying to do is, you're not a horrible person, but this is how you make people feel. And everybody can relate to how you're made to feel when you are bullied or picked on or ostracized or oppressed. And so that inside feeling is human and it's undeniable. People can say, oh, you know, I don't like you for your skin or your height or your sexuality or whatever, but it is different when they see themselves, their human selves in you. That changes when it's no longer about the title or the subtitle. And it's like, oh wait, you're a human like me. How could I deny you of that? When we break it down, and that's what Polka Dots does with the shapes. It's like, I'm a polka dot, I'm a square, I'm a triangle. Oh, that's okay, these are just shapes. It's that simple. And when it's that simple, it's hard to rebuttal in a way that when we're discussing black or white, which is specifically why we did not make it, you know, a race-based specific story, though we are honoring the legacy of Ruby Bridges and Little Rock Nine, you know, being a polka dot means being anyone who has been treated beneath the boot. And kids deal with that every day, whether it's poverty or, weight, height, size, hair color, whatever, you know. So it is really a hug to families to be able to talk about a topic that, you know, nobody wants to deal with racism as we are experiencing right now. And so it just repeats itself, and Polka Dots opens that conversation in homes.
I think two things that I found about this musical in particular, and one piggybacking off of Douglas, is that there are so many musicals that like high schools do that are really about race. And then the high schools that want to do them are like, We're all homogeneous here. We're all one race at the school. We can't do this show. We can't do this show. Here is a show that can be molded and changed to fit different things, to teach this lesson, to teach compassion for another person. And that's something that really strikes me about this show, because it was chosen to be polka dots and squares. Which I was so happy about, because I grew up in a very rural place, you know, very white Christian place. We never did anything like Once on This Island or Aida. Like we wouldn't do West Side. So why would we do West Side Story? But here is something that means a lot to people, and especially needs to be done by students popping themselves into these roles to really experience it.
Yeah, absolutely. Doug, I wanted to ask you specifically, how does your experience as like a writer connect to your experience as like a performer? Because I know you've done a lot of both.
It is a balancing act. Acting gives you health insurance, very important these days. Writing, not as much, for stage at least. I have used what I've learned as an actor to hopefully make anything I write better for the actor to feel inside of. It's very funny when I'm working on a new project, because I act out every single word in my room with myself. And until it feels good off of my tongue, it doesn't go on the page. Like, that is how specific I am about it. So by the time we get to a workshop or a first read or whatever, the actor isn't the first time I've heard it. It already has a scansion to it. It has a feel, and so being an actor prepared me to be a better writer. I just have a different compassion for actors. I always want to make sure they're taken care of, because I understand, you know, how tough the business is. But I saw more of an opportunity and a responsibility as a writer to expand the amount of roles available and accessible to people of color that as an actor alone, I could not necessarily tackle. So I'm still acting, but writing is sort of taking over my life in a beautiful way, because I can create 30 different roles within a year for actors on stage. And like, how awesome is that? You know, like Polka Dots has been done all around the world. It was so crazy. It was done like twice in the same year in Guam, and it won an award in South Africa, and it won the Off-Broadway Alliance Award in New York in 2018 at the Atlantic Theater Company. And that is a testament to the love within the piece, you know? And I think everybody feels that once they tell the story. And so I think we're all very proud of that.
Yeah, congratulations on that, by the way. That's amazing.
What were you able to learn about yourselves as performers through this show, or did you develop or strengthen any new skills with this show?
Well, I know for me, it was the first, I wanna go ahead and say that I think Polka Dots was the first TYA show I've ever done. And it was, I would say that honestly, TYA was something that I think I never really would have pictured myself being interested in. And Polka Dots was the perfect show to fall in love with the world of TYA, because it was a show that I connected so much with personally and related to so much that I feel like the skill I was able to develop was just like a love and desire to wanna impact like the young minds, theatrically, you know. It was right around, like, it wasn't long after that that I started to get into theater education, and Chad brought me on as a assistant director, choreographer for James and the Giant Peach, when I'd never done that before. And I would say that Polka Dot set me up, gave me a new mindset and love of a whole different side of theater that I never was jumping like into exploring. And now I'm just like, you know, it's like the floodgates are open for teaching and directing. And it's like, and Polka Dots was able to give me that love. So it's a skill I'm still developing now, but Polka Dots did plant the seed.
It was about, I did this show, 8 to 10 years after graduation of college. And the hardest thing for me was harmonies, because I hadn't had to sing a harmony in like 6 years. I always had like, oh, you're a soprano, great. Just sing that, you're fine. It's just the melody is good. The amount of time I think we spent on a couple of the songs, because I it was just one note, it still haunts me to this day.
Wait, in what song?
The final song, the finale song. For some reason, like, oh snap, like anytime I had to sing a harmony was a problem. I felt so bad for Naomi. I was like, the whole thing, every
what song,
any song thing? That I wasn't on the melody.
Well, it's also, if you're a soprano, it's tricky because Miss Square is technically the bottom. She's like the tenor.
Oh, really?
She's like the floater. Yeah, because it's because Penelope is the soprano. Lily is usually the second. Mm-hmm. And then Miss Square is the third, is the triad, is the bottom. And then Sky's on the bottom, on the very bottom. And so that track shares a lot of tenor notes, but also blues notes and sevenths and stuff.
And
so
I appreciate it, because y'all
right.
needed the
it's
work.
And I love that, writing for altos. As an alto personally, I love when music is written for altos.
Yeah.
All I say is that I liked playing a child because a child is so free. And so that was something that I was able to, try to bring more into my life, was just like being free. Yeah, not thinking so much about comparing and how everyone else is viewing you and all that stuff.
That is true. Like, now that you say that, you know, when you get to play a character being, you know, 29 years old, like, that is seven. Like, how much more fun and freedom, like you said, Colleen, that you get to play, because kids don't care. Like,
your character sheets are much shorter, because you don't have to go through all of that background. I just have to figure out what happened in the past 7 years.
Right, or 7 minutes, because that's all we can remember as kids. Like,
I have a question about your character, Lily Polka Dot. So did you draw from any like personal experiences of feeling like an outsider or being bullied?
Yeah, 100%. When I was in school, in the art school, I actually was, I want to say, one of less than 10 students that were of color. And we kind of like tie together all the time, you know, talk about our experiences and stuff like that. But we are, it's very rare, especially when you're going into a program that's, you know, supposed to, you know, build people up and all that stuff. But it's not, it's not very often that you see people of color trying to pursue up to that magnitude. So when I was in school, I was dealing with a lot of you know, being an outsider and being, you know, feeling like I don't fit in. And over my years, I have learned that I need to embrace it. You know what I mean? Because nobody looks like me here. But there will eventually be this little girl, this little African-American girl who can go to the art school and be like, oh, Naomi went to the art school and she looks like me, so I can do it too. And it's basically just making sure that you are thinking of future generations. You know what I mean? And that's kind of what I tried to remember in doing the show is, I think I was the third Lily Polka Dot. So that's one of the first. So I literally was like, you know what? This is going to be a trailblazing thing. This is going to be, I'm setting the tone for so many little African-American girls who believe that they can't be a lead in a show. You know, this is your part. This is for you. And that's kind of what I drew on.
I wanted to ask Colleen about like how did it feel to like get into the headspace of like the bully in the show, but also knowing that she has to be redeemable and that like at the end you have to root for her to support Lily.
First of all, I don't play these roles usually, so it's hard to get into the headspace. But not to get religious, but like Passion of the Christ, I knew, like, I hated that devil in the movie. I'm like, ooh, you're scary. This is awful. But we need you to tell the story, you know? So you kind of need, and I was like, I really want to tell a story and I need to be here to tell it. And so I'm going to be this person. And I think that was the driving force, is like, this story needs to be told. So I'm going to do what I need to do. But I think it was helpful, again, going back to the child thing, just being a child, because then you can add humor to it, because that's just how a child thinks, this is funny if I throw that at your face, even though it's like, that is really, wow, absolutely not, absolutely not. Like, this is funny because you're really childish right now. So that helped me a lot not get too dark. But yeah, it was definitely a challenge. But I think we also all have those like cringeworthy moments that we look past. I look back on, that's like, why did I ever do that? You know, like, why did I say that? That was so hurtful. Like, I wish I could take that back. So I think it's easier to forgive when you're like, yeah, I've been there. Maybe not as bad as Penelope, but so I think it's easier for the audience to have that forgiveness at the end because of that.
She also like doesn't know, you know, if you woke up, well, you were brought up being given ice cream for 3 meals a day, mm-hmm. you would think, well, why isn't everyone eating ice cream 3 meals a day? You wouldn't know any different. So the mm-hmm. issue with children that are taught racism is that they just don't know the difference. They're dragged to the rallies. You know, we've seen the pictures of history where the kids are, you know, holding the horrible signs with horrible things on them. They didn't say, Mom, let's go to this protest and do it. No, they were brought there. And so their mentality is taught to them, and that's what we're combating, is like, there's an age-old issue of race in America, and you have to have the conversation young to try to get in before the brain is washed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Bam.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Doug, how was it from a writer's perspective, getting into the headspace of someone whose views don't align with your own?
Well, working with Melvin was fun, because I handed him like a 7-page manifesto that I had dreamed up of the world. Like, I have to find it, but it was like, when you walk, you know, in the world, the trees are actually pineapples, and like I created what I thought would be this magical thing, and then he sort of used that as inspiration through his voice. And so like the squidot was something that came from Melvin. And then he used my reaction, which was like, what is the squidot? And he put that in script. So my favorite way of writing characters when I write book, on Polka Dots, I did music and lyric and Melvin wrote the book, but is to ask every character in the play the same question. And when you're writing them, most likely they would answer it differently. And that's where you tap into the personality of the character. So if you ask Sky, how's your day going? He might not respond, right? Because he's too shy. He might say, fine. Miss Square would be like, oh, it's lovely, right? Lily would be like, I don't know you, because she just got there. Penelope would not stop talking, you know? And so how do you differentiate those personalities? That's actually the fun. And my technique has usually been, if I can answer a question from each character in a different voice, then they're distinguished and distinct enough from each other.
Yeah. So Adam, I wanted to ask you, what did you do to prepare to tell your character's story that has such a powerful connection to some darker times in American history? And I know you mentioned your past and how that you needed a character like Sky in when you were younger. Did you draw from any points in your life?
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, I was bullied all through middle school about being gay when I didn't even really know what that meant. You know, it's so interesting when, you know, you're being told that you are something, then before you know who you are or what you are, it's like one thing to discover that on your own, and it's another thing for that to be shoved down your throat of like, you are this and will be this and this is bad. And I think that was, it was, you know, I was not Lily Polka Dot, but I was able to, from an outside perspective, kind of watch that journey. And so playing Sky, it was all about, I almost feel like I had it kind of easy because I was able to look at this struggle and not understand why it was happening, because I went through all of that growing up and didn't understand why. You know, it just made no sense. Everybody can be different. You can be gay and that's okay. You know, I did struggle a lot with telling myself that being gay wasn't a bad thing. And then once I was able to embrace that, I was like, okay, cool. And I'm a very empathetic person. It's gonna take me a lot to not understand your point of view. You know, I feel like I try to keep an open mind as possible. And so with Sky, I felt like I actually had it kind of easy because it was easy to be on the same wavelength as him, to not understand why this was going on, to not know why it was wrong, and coming from a place kind of like what Douglas was saying of Sky was, I think, someone that was able to recognize as a young mind, why are you bringing me to the rally? Why are you shoving this sign in my, that says bad things? I think Sky was someone who really didn't understand, and having an at-home bully himself, his sister, you know, he was able to understand going into meeting someone different that, you know, well, you're being bullied by everybody. I'm bullied at home. I totally understand what you're going through, because I don't know why my sister hates me. She just does, you know? And on top of it, it's that connection between the two of them allows for like, what I like to think that, you know, maybe in high school, they would have gotten together, you know, like that would, it's such a beautiful little love that like, you know, like with kids, it's just like, I love you. And I don't understand why. I just know that I love you and I'm drawn to you. And, you know, please, as like a 6-year-old, I had some girlfriends. Okay. Don't you worry about that. I had some loves. I have some loves. Shout out to Courtney. But, you know, it was not, you know, I don't know if this sounds like pretentious. It wasn't difficult to connect with Sky on that level because I felt like I needed him. And if I had had Sky as a kid, you know, it would have been a saving grace for me, and definitely would have helped with like confidence and being a forward, more outgoing person. Not that I feel like I'm not that way now, but maybe I would be more so had I not, you know, had I had a Sky. So if anything, it was fun getting to create a character that I have always wanted in my life.
Huh. Yeah, that's amazing. And I feel like what the show does really well is it plays on empathy. And I feel like everyone can see themselves in one, if not multiple, of the characters. And there's really something there for everyone.
So the show is, I did some researching and I listened to it this morning. It is gorgeous. I love it. Thank so you. It's described according to a playwright's website. As a musical comedy. And I was thinking adding comedy elements as well as like a youthful vibe in the costumes and setting of the show definitely makes it easier for kids to understand. I wanted to know, like, how do you think the message reached adults as well, especially in America today? How do you think that affected the message?
So we were lucky to have a production at the Irvington Playhouse in April of 2016. And over 200 theater students saw it that week, and we had a series of talkbacks, and after one of them a teacher came up to us and said, thank you so much, because I don't know how to have this conversation with my students. She was in tears, and often teachers are left out of the conversation, and there's an appreciation for how Miss Square navigates the world where, you know, teachers who have to deal with bullying on a daily basis get to have that scene and displayed in front of their class, and it makes it easier to have that conversation. So what I think is really beautiful about the piece is that it is not just a TYA piece. You're not gonna go with your kid and go, oh my God, here we go. You know, you have to engage with them. It will make you ask questions. It will make them ask questions after. It's a conversation starter for the family. And especially for young kids of color or oppressed children, you know, we had a girl that week at Irvington who said, I feel like a polka dot, like in tears. Mm-hmm. You know, our Lily polka dot was hugging her. It's like, it's because she was the only Black girl in her class and she felt that way. And she mm-hmm. wasn't able to articulate how she was feeling, I think, until she saw the play. There's another really beautiful story of this autistic child who was not often speaking. But the actor that was playing Sky Square was his cousin, and his family brought the boy to see the play. He had not spoken in a very long time, and he spoke after Polka Dots. I was like,
oh my gosh.
I'm gonna lose it. Like, good night, I'm out of here, that's it. And so that the show has also changed the course of my career as a writer. One, it was the first thing that sort of established, oh, maybe this isn't a mistake. But then secondly, that initiative for children and them being very important and them being the future, and theater not really mattering for the 1% that goes to Broadway, but really the kids in their communities all around the world, they will be the theater goers in 10, 20 years from now. So it sort of pivoted my view of what theater can do from a selfish standpoint to a more global conversation. Yeah,
I think that's awesome. I think theater that makes people think and sparks conversation and puts a message out to someone and people can relate to it from all different backgrounds makes theater so beautiful and is just so amazing. So yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah. So I have to know, was it fun or annoying to have all the polka dots and squares all over your face?
Okay. So here's the thing of that after I was like, what was a special skill that you got from polka dots? It was so cool because I've never ever in a show had to wear any type of like prosthetic or something that had to be like super glued to my body. And it was fun to like put it on the face, of course. It was not the greatest to put it on like my arms because of my arm hair. So it was like, I think after the first trial of it and then trying to get it off, it was one of the things where you're just like, you know, like a Band-Aid, you just got to rip it. Except, like, you know, Band-Aids are fine. You know, this didn't really look cute. So I actually had to, like, shave my arms.
Oh, my gosh.
And which I will say, you know, was kind of nice. It was fresh. I felt, I did feel like a breeze on there was really nice. It felt good.
It's a new experience.
It was a new experience. I've never had shaved arms before. You know, I know swimmers do that. So that was an experience that I went through. I had to shave my arms and it was great.
I feel like having those and like looking back, I'm seeing it in one way. Maybe this is not the case, but I definitely got burned from the glue. And I was like,
I know me too.
About this. Like, look at the story we're telling. I do not have a right to complain about this. Like, this is a small thing to go through. So part of me, this is helpful to like kind of take on pain and be like, yeah, this is all right. I can take this. People are going through way worse. But maybe looking back, like I may have been like, I'm burnt. Like I'm getting burnt all over.
Right.
But it really didn't bother me that much because it was like putting everything into perspective. So yeah, it was really fun besides that.
Yeah. Besides the burns, it was great.
I don't know. I thought I rocked them. I looked gorgeous. I didn't find them annoying. I loved the blue. I loved the whole look.
Yeah.
I love a good wig.
Oh yeah. That was like, that was a cool wig. That blue wig. Oh yeah. That was awesome. It was also cool because I you know, having done it, like I still try to follow, you know, Douglas, when you post about different theaters doing it, I love to see what they did with their sets and their costumes. And I don't think I've seen anything yet do the prosthetics kind of like what we did, which makes me feel kind of like, okay, cool, like OG prosthetics. You know, so that's exciting and it's fun and it's cool to see what other people do. I mean, I feel like when we were initially sat down and we were presented, I think I was told that I was going to be like full body paint. And I was like, let's go. I'm ready for that. But then we were like, no, we're doing prosthetics. And I was like, I just feel like I'm getting all these dreams thrown at me that are awesome. I'm going to be full body paint Elphaba. Scratch that. You're going to put me in prosthetics. And I love it. And it was so cool. Did we get burned? Sure. But it was worth it.
Yes. Douglas, how has the pandemic been changing things for this show and who will be presenting it in the hopefully near-ish future?
It's funny. We just did a long, what's actually completing today, but we did a week-long family festival with the Ordway and they were going to have a production. They're actually postponing till next year. We gave permission to one theater to do a private, it's not even stream, it's a capture that then they'll have a private link to so that their audiences can see it. We're trying to work with the people that we're going to put on the show. But it's hard. Like I'm very particular about how we protect the piece because you want to make sure the integrity lands. And so this whole Zoom thing, if it's not for a meeting, can be a little weird. But there are a lot of theaters that have it in their season now or next year. And I think people are just going to have to wait and listen to that album on Sony Masterworks.
Yes, plug.
Plug it right in there.
Yes.
And it's also cool to see just kids, like we've gotten messages on our Facebook that are like, my daughter loves this show. Where can we get the rights? Because I'm tired of hearing her sing it. You know, like that to me is like the whole point is that theater can influence the children's minds. And the message, even if they don't understand it, they are already projecting it through the music, you know? So,
yeah. 100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, it's honestly, I love that these type of shows bring up that conversation too, because it's just so important to have. If we don't talk about it, there's not going to be a change. You know what I mean? And so it bringing up the topic is the way in, you know what I mean? It's the path towards a good, you know, a better world.
So thank you all so much for being here today and for taking the time out of your day to talk to us and to help us create the first episode of this podcast, which we are so excited to get up.
Yes. I'm so excited. Yeah. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you.
Hey listeners, thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of Theater with Pride. Make sure to check us out on our Instagram and Facebook accounts at Theater with Pride, and visit our website, theaterwithpride.buzzsprout.com, for more episodes. Another huge thank you to all of our guest artists who joined us on this episode. Make sure to show some support to Naomi Braff's newest project, her Renegade Theater Company. All information for donations and support are in the description below.